Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. For 12 years, residents of Clatsop County in the northwest corner of Oregon battled proposals to build massive liquefied natural gas terminals near the mouth of the Columbia River. On April 15, 2016, the last of these proposals was defeated when Oregon LNG withdrew the permit request for their beleaguered project in Warrenton, just west of Astoria. After breathing a long sigh of relief and elation, anti-LNG activists have transformed their anti-LNG movement into a long-term movement to protect the Columbia estuary from any new potential threats. This morning, we talk with Lori Kaplan, one of two women who led the fight to stop LNG in Clatsop County. We'll talk about why they won and the organizing models they created that are applicable to all the other fights against fossil fuel development being waged across the Northwest. Lori, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you, Barbara. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, this is a really exciting story that's been going on for a really long time, and I think a lot of people in Portland have some idea of what you've been up against in Clatsop County. But for those who don't, let's just back up 12 years and talk about what was happening in Clatsop County then and what you started to find out about maybe some rumblings of change.
Well, I think the first thing that we heard was that there were going to be two proposals right on the Columbia River to import liquefied natural gas. I don't want to talk in paragraphs, so you're going to have to guide me.
Okay.
Anyway, and almost right away, the Port of Astoria had signed a lease with one of the companies, which at that time was called Calpine, to do this project, and they held a very hastily called public meeting, like with no notice, and it was a done deal. And the other project was called Bradwood Landing. That was by another natural gas company, and that was going to be on private land a little bit further upriver, about 20 miles from the mouth of the Columbia.
Well, when did you find out about it? Because, I mean, you said that it was very...
I think, as far as I know, that most of the community found out in November of 2004. And nobody really knew what an LNG was. I'm fairly sure even the port commissioners who signed the lease didn't know what it was. But it's both of these projects would have just been massive projects. And in Clatsop County, I'm not sure there's maybe two buildings taller than eight stories in all of Clatsop County. And these projects would have involved storage tanks for liquefied natural gas that would have each been 17 stories tall and as big around as a downtown Portland city block. And as often as I have said that, I still can't picture it. That's just huge. And I think what got most people is that most people were picturing like a grain silo, something we all know about. A lot of people were picturing pipes carrying the natural gas, like the gas pipes that come into our house, which are what, an inch maybe? And these pipes would have been 3 feet in diameter, and they would have been carrying unodorized gas throughout not just Clatsop County, but Columbia County and several other counties, just depending on the routes that the companies were planning.
Actually, I think they're going to go through the Mount Hood Wilderness
Area. Mount Hood, farmland, prime forest land, public lands, private lands, and both companies have been empowered by the 2005 Energy Act, I believe, where they could use eminent domain to take private property for private companies, for private use, whereas the American tradition has always been if the government is taking your land, it's for something good, like that benefits the community, like a library or a school. This was totally different.
Well, I think that very few of us recognized when these plans started becoming public now 12 years ago that this was really a foreshadowing of a big move that was happening here in the Northwest, which was to turn this area into a major export hub for fossil fuels.
That's
but,
right.
But what was surprising, I mean, as you said, most people didn't know what liquefied natural gas or LNG was. I'm one of them. I had never heard of it before. And I had no idea just how dangerous it was until I started digging into it and started hearing some very good reports, most of them here on KABU, actually. And so it was a really new thing. And so you guys out in Clatsop County were not like those people here in the Portland area who are now fighting the terminal being proposed in Vancouver to be the largest oil by train export terminal in North America. This was something new. This was not an area that's been known as a fossil fuel hub. So what was your response when you realized that you had this very different kind of problem to deal with? It's a lot different than dealing with fishing issues or timber issues or any of the other things that we're kind of familiar with out here.
I think for most of us, when I saw the drawings of what the shipping route would be on the Columbia, I just assumed it was that no one would take this further because it would have totally disrupted shipping because LNG tankers are, I believe they're considered a terrorist target. I know that the terminals are. And they have right-of-way. They are accompanied by gunboats that are armed and tugboats. And they have precedence over everything else in the river. And so that would have meant, as far as I could tell, like grain shipments from eastern Oregon, those ships would have been stalled while tankers were either gumming up river or berthed while they loaded and unloaded and then turning around and going back out again. And they were expecting tanker trips, I believe it was almost like one every other day. So the disruption to shipping would have been enormous. And I was floored, as were many other people, when this project kept moving forward, that local and state and federal government people were just blithely going ahead with permitting and, you know, reviewing and taking applications. There were also people who looked at these projects and just saw jobs and taxes, which is what both companies were promising. They were deceptive promises. They have no intention of keeping them. Most of these, the two companies that were here, as far as we know, were set up merely to get the permits. These were not companies that had ever built anything. They exist to get permits for these kinds of massive fossil fuel projects, and then they sell those permits to companies that actually know how to build these kind of massive terminals. And there are crews that travel the world that are experienced building these things because they're incredibly complex. Tons of structures. It's not just tanks and pipes. It's outbuildings and support buildings and flare-off buildings. The blueprints that were shown on their websites were just incredibly complex. So the jobs would not have certainly not gone to Clatsop County people unless there were a lot of unemployed PhDs in chemical engineering floating around, which there aren't. And maybe some Oregonians might have gotten some of these jobs, but most of the construction jobs and operating jobs would have gone to these crews who have long experience in the petroleum and fossil fuel industry. So it was there was so much non-information. There was stuff we didn't know, and then there was a lot of misinformation going around.
So for listeners, we do have some listeners from around the country listening to us online, I just want you to describe a little bit about Clatsop County. I mean, this is not a large industrialized municipality, is it?
No. We are essentially, if you look at a map, Clatsop County is where the mouth of the Columbia meets the Pacific Ocean. It is rural. It is green. It has incredibly unstable soil. It has wonderful weather when it's wonderful and dreary rain and lots of cloud cover and wins a good chunk of the time. It's splendid. I love it here. My house overlooks the Columbia River. I'm looking at it right now from my dining room. But it is rural. It was basically a fishing and logging area since Astoria was started in 1811 is our official birthday.
Actually, you're the oldest settlement, the oldest European settlement on the in the Northwest.
Right. That's right. West, I think it's west of the, well, it might not be west of the Mississippi, but it's close. In any case, the logging and fishing industries have changed dramatically over the last 50 years, especially over the last 20 years, and people were really feeling uncertain as to the future of this largely rural community. It used to be a place where a blue-collar worker could make a tremendously wonderful salary to support a family, and there's always been that wonderful pride in accomplishment of really hard, dangerous work. And so the transition to other kinds of work has been, it's been difficult for a lot of old-timers and traditional families. And I think a lot of people saw this terminal, this industrial site, as a new kind of economy that would have been appropriate for this kind of area. I think it was harder for people to recognize the destruction it would have caused, and I don't mean just to the estuary by dredging or to the farmlands and the forest lands by trying to build pipelines through there, but these proposals would have really damaged our beauty, our quality of life, would have destroyed many jobs in fishing. Our tourism and the hospitality industry throughout the county is growing. Nobody wants to come visit an LNG terminal on their vacation, so that would have just damaged a lot of stuff. There were all kinds of repercussions that people really couldn't get. And then, on top of all of that, as we learned more about the potential of the Cascadia earthquake, Warrenton and actually the Broadwood Landing site too, but all of us are in the Cascadia subduction earthquake zone. So where they were planning on putting the Oregon LNG terminal was a sand spit on fill on top of bedrock that nobody could find at sea level.
This is a tsunami zone.
In a subduction earthquake and tsunami zone. And so we thought right away, well, why would anyone even contemplate that? But no official said, no, you can't do that. That's nuts. So that was our voice. We were the ones who had to say, no, you can't do that. That's nuts. It's dangerous. It's destructive. And we won't stand for it.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Lori Kaplan, who is one of two women who led the fight to stop LNG in Clatsop County. And their fight bore final fruits of success just last April when the second of the two proposed LNG terminals revoked their permit requests. So, Lori, how did it go from being all your civic leaders or all your political leaders at any rate from the city and the county were just basically approving after approving the different stages of requests for these LNG terminals? How did it go from that to where there was this huge community outpouring against LNG? How did you first start gathering people who were vocal opponents and could actually organize the community?
Okay, and I think one of the fascinating things is when you look back at it, we didn't know. We didn't know it would take 11 and a half years. We later learned that the average time to defeat a proposal like this is 7 years. We didn't know that, which is probably a really good thing because we kept thinking, well, we'll do this next thing and that'll kill it. What happened, we were really fortunate. Clatsop County has this terrific richness of talent and experience in people. There are only like 37,000 of us, but there are some really stellar people in that 37,000. And a few people got together and, recognizing the difference, and started a group called River Vision. And they were organizing against it. They did some demonstrations and marches, you know, peaceful and friendly, but still, they were trying to do what they could to inform the public. And then that group kind of broadened its focus to other environmental issues. And out of that, a couple of people took up the no LNG cause as their main cause. And the primary leader for that is Cheryl Johnson, who lives in the Astoria area in a little area called Brownsmead. And she can't be on the phone today.
She's taking care of her grandkids, she told me. But
yeah, that's right.
But she actually, she lives right near where the Bradford Landing terminal
was
being proposed.
Right, she was right close to where the Bradford Landing proposal was going to be. And to her and her husband, Ted Messing, this was so personal. I mean, it was their home, their life. He built their home. It's a geodesic dome, and it's wood, and it's gorgeous, and they farm, and they fish, and they picnic on the shores of the Columbia River. So for them, it was this hugely personal issue. And one wonderful thing about Cheryl is she does not let go, and she stuck with it. She was able to, through some people that she knew, after a lot of outreach to other groups, found Columbia River Keeper, which is a nonprofit based in Hood River, which is also part of a national group of river keeper organizations that are nonprofit, community-based, volunteer-based. And Columbia River Keeper, for all of this time, virtually the entire 11 and a half years, so probably 10 years, I'm guessing, has provided our legal and scientific and organizing and other professional expertise. And without Columbia River Keeper, those terminals would have been built. And without Cheryl, probably those terminals would have been built.
So how did you get involved?
How did I get involved? Oh, it's really kind of funny. I had a crazy work schedule, so I had to give up practically all my volunteer work because my hours were unpredictable. My schedule was crazy. And when that job ended, I contacted someone and said, how do I get involved? And the next thing I know, I'm meeting Cheryl for lunch. And I think it was within a few days she's taking me to a coalition meeting of all these other groups that are working to stop the LNG proposals in Portland. So she's driving, and I'm madly scribbling notes trying to figure out what, what, who, where. And that's how I got involved. And the very first thing that we planned together that I recall was a Mother's March against LNG on Mother's Day in 2007. And that was probably one of the first more widely publicized events that we did to try to wake people up and let them know what was really going on.
When did you notice that there was a shift and that people actually were starting to take your concerns seriously?
You know, I don't think I have a date, but I can tell you what we noticed. There were a number of public hearings in Astoria because we're the county seat for Clatsop County, and Clatsop County had some say about the pipeline because of federal law, which would be paragraphs if I were to go into it. So there were public hearings as to whether the county should approve the pipeline. And we started holding rallies outside the county building as a way to boost our morale, and again, as a way to tell people, hey, this is a bad thing. And we had, by that time, we had red T-shirts printed up that said no LNG. We had yard signs and it printed, and then people made their own. And at our early rallies, people would jeer. They'd give us a finger. They'd yell. They'd swear at us, you know, as they were driving by. And it was pretty demoralizing. And then at some point, people started applauding and honking in support and smiling and waving and saying, yay! So I don't have a date. I'm guessing maybe 2009. And we had a number of other events going on in the county at the same time, somewhat related. So I think as people were able to get more information, they found out, you know, that a lot of what the companies were telling them was bogus. Our local newspaper, the Daily Astorian, did a stellar job providing really good, complete articles and information. Not all papers in Oregon were like that. Some of them wouldn't even publish letters to the editor that opposed these projects.
Well, actually, to interject, I mean, my recollection, the Oregonian, I think, finally came on board and did some good reporting, but it seemed like it took a long time.
Ted Sickinger did a lot of really good work, and I think some of that was due to the fact that Columbia Riverkeeper really was trying to also bring people up to speed. And so I think some people met with Ted and other reporters. And there was this ongoing effort. Well, and see, I think this is part of what's so complicated is lots of things were going on at once. So we were doing stuff here locally. Riverkeeper was doing things. The permitting process is bizarre. I don't know if there's another word. The federal government, in theory, requires that these companies have all their local, so that city and county and state permits for air and water, for a jillion different things, before the federal government will weigh in. But what we found was going on was that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, which has authority over granting the kind of final permits for these things, was going ahead with the permitting process and the application process, even though neither terminal had any local permits. And even once the Clatsop County Commissioners denied the pipeline, which should have said, all right, no, it's done, the state of Oregon kept on processing permits, and so did the federal government through FERC. So we've had to really hang on to our sense of humor because there were things that just didn't make sense, that didn't seem fair. But that's the way it was.
Well, actually, there seemed to be a big shift that rippled out here, you know, up the Columbia River 100 miles. A political seismic shift in Clatsop County, and it seemed to start. It was after the, tell me if I'm correct, the Clatsop County Commission voted to approve the terminals, and then there was a recall, and then there was a re-election. So how did things shift politically? And I'm wondering how you got the political organization and power behind you to make this seismic shift politically.
Well, the nice thing about politics is that the politics is each person. So if you get enough people participating, there's your political power. We made our political power. We created our political power. And I think that would be the lesson that I would want any group working for or against any cause to know, is that if people get involved, if they don't just wait for other people to make decisions for them, if they don't just think that things are inevitable, if we don't submit to passive fatalism, then you can get a whole lot done. So we had, what we found was that the first set of county commissioners were, it was almost funny the way they held their hearing. I mean, we had to stop ourselves from laughing. They would have these incredibly complicated documents, binders of documents that they were supposed to review, and none of these commissioners had any questions. One woman had questions about punctuation, and I think their question period was like 5 minutes, whereas for most public hearings like this, it's days of questions by the commissioners themselves, which we later learned after we had a new slate of commissioners on board.
So how did you get the new slate of commissioners? What was the motivation that...
There were three recall elections organized by local people, us, and all volunteers, and we actually lost two of them, and we only recalled one commissioner. I think it was by 4 votes or 6 votes. So recall is not popular. People don't like to do recalls. I think they think it's rude or unseemly or something. But in the course of doing the recall elections, we were also providing all kinds of information about why we thought the commissioners had failed in their duty to uphold Oregon laws, to uphold county laws, and to protect the safety of the public. So we did that through lots of mailings and letters to the editor and going door to door. This was a, what do they say, boots on the ground effort. It took hundreds of people probably just to do the campaigning. We had also had a referendum in 2008 that was because Bradwood Landing had wanted to put part of their pipeline going through a public park along the Columbia. And so we had a no pipeline in parks referendum that was countywide. It was not the regular date for an election. It was in September. We were the only item on the ballot. We had a 57% turnout, which is huge for any election, and 67% of the people said no pipelines in parks. And again, that campaign was based on educating people, letting people know the scope of this project, the risks to public health and safety, to clean water, clean air, to our local economies, to shipping, to fishing. And I think you have to give people credit because they were hearing so much information and they took it in and they sorted it out and they realized that the Bradwood Landing project was crazy and that pipeline shouldn't be in parks and that we needed better commissioners. And that's what we got. I mean, this was all people staying focused on what was important and being committed to making this happen.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Lori Kaplan, who is one of two women who led the fight to stop LNG in Clatsop County, a fight that was finally won last April when the second of two proposed terminals terminated its permit applications. Besides, once you had a new county commission, my understanding is the first thing they did was that they voted to repeal the permits that the previous county commission had granted. Is that true?
Yes.
And then on top of that, there was another shift that seemed to maybe motivate people when these import terminals that were going to be bringing the much needed natural
right.
gas to Oregon suddenly turned into export terminals because fracking was producing excess gluts of natural gas in this country and the price of natural gas right. had dropped precipitously. So how did that also change public opinion?
Well, because I think at the most basic level, these companies had kept saying that we needed this gas, that America was starving for gas. One of our old county commissioners was worried that if we didn't import liquefied natural gas, he wouldn't have any gas for his barbecue. And I guess he thought these 36-inch pipelines were going to snake right up to his yard and bring him natural gas. what happened was, I think people realized they'd been lied to. These companies don't make these kind of decisions overnight, so they had obviously known for quite a while that they were going to be shifting to exporting natural gas. And what that did was point out their lies, but it also pointed out the risks for all of us, because the international gas prices, had we started exporting American or North American natural gas, our domestic gas prices would have risen to the level of what they are in other countries, specifically Asia, which is 2 to 3 times what we pay. So even as these companies were promoting exporting, there were major industrial companies allying with us and saying, because they can't afford higher natural gas prices.
Now, actually, I want to back up to almost the beginning, because some people might not understand what liquefied natural gas is and why it's actually more dangerous in a lot of ways than just gaseous natural gas.
Okay, and I'm just going to tell you the basics, because otherwise it's not paragraphs, it's pages.
Entire volumes.
Yeah. But liquefied natural gas, it's a fossil fuel. It's natural gas that is super cooled and shipped and then stored if they were exporting it. The process for taking the natural gas it's so dirty. You know, we talk about natural gas as a clean fuel, and many of us, including me, use it. But it is not clean. Fracking, as many of your listeners know, is so filthy, and we probably just have only an iota of knowledge about what it's doing to our water and our groundwater and the air and to people's bodies from all the chemicals, because they don't have to. The company's got dispensation from the government, so they don't have to tell what chemicals are involved in the fracking process. So then there's all the destruction of building these pipelines. And then in the process of shipping and processing and cooling natural gas, big amounts of methane leak out, and this is something they're discovering more and more about. And methane leakage, they're now finding, causes more problems with the climate and global warming than does carbon dioxide. And then, when you're shipping this stuff, there's transfers of ballast water. And this is one of the huge concerns for both import and export, because warm water from these tankers would have been released into the Columbia River. The Columbia River is already experiencing warming, as is the ocean, which is why it's harder and harder to get salmon. Salmon are moving north into cooler waters. So there was nothing really clean about importing or exporting when liquefied natural gas, especially when you include the whole process from extracting natural gas to its final destination.
So I'm curious, what caused both of these projects to die? Let's start first with...
I'd like to say it was all of us. It was people power. It was really good legal work and other professional work from Columbia Riverkeeper. We were really lucky. We had the right people and the place and the time to fight this. Our kind of operating philosophy was 1,000 cuts. We learned early on that one decision, even a veto of a permit, wasn't going to kill it. to kill either of these projects, but that it would take 1,000 cuts. And there's a wonderful quote about that that I won't tell you, but it's great. And it's just something that inspired us, that each of us could do something to inflict one of those 1,000 cuts, and that's what was going to kill the projects. And that's essentially what happened. So Broadwood Landing announced on May 4th, 2010, my birthday, that it was quitting. It was, how did they put it, withdrawing its applications. And then the next day they declared bankruptcy. This was a company that had promised money to so many organizations and businesses, and it left people with unpaid bills. It left owing the county $200,000. It left charities with pledges uncollected, and it didn't pay all of its bills locally. So they went broke. And then in a similar situation, Oregon LNG was owned by a holding company out of New York called Leucadia National. And a few years ago, Leucadia had said in their annual report, well, this company really still doesn't have any permits yet, and we're going to really be watching if we want to keep funding it. And for some reason, they kept on funding it. The company still didn't get any permits. And I believe they just got tired of pouring good money after bad for all these years. So they announced on April 15th of this year that they weren't going to be funding anymore, and Oregon LNG was withdrawing. And partly what happened was because we think they just expected us to roll over and be grateful for their promises, and we didn't. And we took them to court. We contested hearings. We made this a long process for them. Now, they were all getting paid. The staff, such as they were of these companies, and the attorneys and consultants were all getting paid during this whole long process. We weren't. Volunteers in Clatsop County certainly weren't getting any money. So we were actually giving up our own money and time and talent and experience and energy to work on this. And I think they thought they could outlast us, and they were wrong.
Well, now that you have won some really significant battles, I understand that your anti-LNG organization has morphed into a new group called CREATE. So let's end by talking a little bit about what CREATE is about and what those six letters stand for.
Okay, it's a great name. It was created by Dan Sears of Columbia Riverkeeper, but we all love it. It means Columbia River Estuary Action Team. And it is a group that's going to focus on broader issues that affect the estuary. So that still means coal and oil, because those kinds of shipments, either by rail or ship, could definitely damage the estuary. A number of local people have been following the forest issues in Northwest Oregon for quite a while, and specifically Clatsop County, because the health of the forest reflects directly on the health of the Columbia River and the fish and other life along it. So there's that. We've got people trying to focus more on some of the local governments to see what they might plan for their parts of the estuary. Fishing is an issue. Our first organizing meeting, which was held, I have to tell you, the morning after our victory party for defeating Oregon LNG, the very next morning,
you guys don't stop.
50 people showed up at a meeting. Couldn't believe it. And we had a list. I think there's like 20 odd topics of things that people want to pay pay attention to. And so a lot of that will be individual people and clumps of people just following the things that are dear to them. And then as issues arise that need larger, more organized group work, then that's what we'll do.
It sounds
we
like...
We'll have... Pardon me?
Well, it sounds like when, as we continue to struggle upriver here against the coal and the oil terminals that are still being proposed, that we have your back at the mouth, and you won't let those projects get out to the end of the river.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, this is such an incredibly beautiful place, and one of our, well, several, actually, people who've been really active in this LNG cause work at a local hotel that gets a lot of tourists from really around the world, and they are constantly telling us how people are floored that there is still this relatively untouched, beautiful spot. And of course, it's touched. We've built houses and roads and streets and buildings, but there's no industrial facility right here at the mouth, and we want to protect not just our way of life, but we want to protect the estuary and the river because it belongs to everybody. It doesn't just belong to us.
Well, Lori, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and we'll keep abreast of what's continuing in Astoria because you live in a very special place, and you're protecting a very special place for all of us. So thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Barbara.
And I'll see you soon, I hope.
Good. Yeah. Okay.
Bye-bye. We've been talking with Clatsop County anti-LNG activist Lori Kaplan, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll talk more about preventing the Northwest from becoming a fossil fuel export hub with Paul Lumley, Executive Director of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. My engineer is Natasha Delafine. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Mavis Staples doing a tune by Curtis Mayfield. Thanks for listening.
I've got to keep on pushing. I can't stop now. Move up a little higher. Some way or somehow. 'Cause I've got